Welcome to Motivated to Lead Podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're focusing on the subject of resilience. Our guest is Ned Pauley. He is an associate professor of management at the Graduate School of Defense Management at the Naval Postgraduate School. And he teaches organizational behavior in the MBA level program. And he also teaches workshops and coaches senior leaders. And he has got some great thoughts he's going to share around leadership today, and looking forward to conversation with Ned. It's great to have Ned joining us as our guest this week. And I guess, first off, can you give us just a little bit of your story, a little bit of your career history?
Sure. I started teaching at the Naval Postgraduate School about 15 years ago, and got really interested in the concept of resilience in the military, based on some of the work that I had done as a PhD student with the military, and also based on the dissertation work I did on a crisis incident that happened when I was a student there at the school. Gunmen came to the building, broke through one of the entrances, and sort of took the building in a hostage situation for about 7 hours before the police could corner him and take him into custody. One of the students, one of our students, was killed. A few others were, you know, badly wounded. But I remarked, you know, quite a strength that the people in the school had. There was a sense of camaraderie, a sense of connection, a sense of family, and people kept describing what was happening in that sense. So I went about interviewing and talking to a lot of people, and really got interested in how organizations and how people manage through difficulty and crisis. So I took that sort of learning and that understanding with me as I started continuing to work in the military and been teaching officers in different services.
And I think the topic around resilience is probably definitely an important one during the last 10 months, and people have been dealing with a lot of different issues and stress and trying to figure things out kind of on the fly. What are some things that you've, during this time, anything that stands out that you've learned maybe new about resilience that you think would be helpful?
I've learned that resilience has become a popular word. And I think that, and almost overused in a way, that we've kind of lost a little bit its kind of core meaning. But I've also noticed, one of the things I've noticed is how quote unquote resilient people are through this. There's a big part of resilience is about adaptation. It's about being agile. It's about being flexible. It's about having a vision and a perspective of what the future can be. And when we have uncertainty about those things, then it becomes difficult. But when people can latch on to a vision and understand, you know, that things are going to be okay and that we're going to be able to work things through and anticipate things in the future, then we're much more likely to show that resilience through those times. I think people also, you know, they either have resilience built up in reserve, or they haven't, right? And those that have sort of built up good relationships within their families, within their work colleagues, they're probably going to fare better than those who have poorer relationships. And so the key to a big key to resilience that I found in my research, as well as in a lot of other research that's been done, is the need for a strong connections with the people that you work with and the people that you live with. So yeah, it's been a very interesting time to see how people have responded. You know, I've seen it with my own kids, my family. I've seen it in the community, and I've seen it at work, and just different ways that people are responding, different ways that people are adapting and making work and making school work from home and trying to figure out those things. And some with fewer resources, it's challenging, but they also show a resilience to get through and to manage and to figure out, and other people can help step in. And that's where those relationships in the community and in the schools and stuff really make a difference.
So you kind of mentioned, we talked a little bit before we got started about, I don't know if I'm using the exact term, like deposits that we get in our resilience account. Talk about, you mentioned relationships as part of that, is getting that into our account so that we have something to draw from. Anything else that you think is important for people to have?
Sure. So one of the studies that we've done, and this was in the military, it was at the boot camp in Great Lakes, Illinois, just north of Chicago. One of the things that we wanted to know is, how do you build resilience with people going through really tough times? And we set up a couple of different really sort of very small experiments. One was to have them just do some meditation. Another one was to have them interact and have a social connection to another person. Now, at the boot camp, they're not likely to speak to each other very much because it's a very regimented kind of place. But one of the things that we found was that the people who built those social connections reported higher levels of resilience sort of later in time. And what we, the way we teach this is that resilience is not just something that I have in my head or that I just carry around with me, but it's something that grows in the relationships that I have with other people. We put deposits in by making good relationships with people and strengthening those relationships, whether it's with our colleagues at work and whether it's a personal relationship, whether it's our manager or the leader that's in our organization. Or our clients and customers that we're dealing with. And then when things become difficult, we really reach out and draw on those relationships to help strengthen us, help us make good decisions, help us to navigate the challenges and the decisions that we have to make to be successful.
So with your experience that you've got kind of that individual resilience factor, have you found that some people just naturally have more resilience, or is it something that everybody has to learn as far as to be a part of their kind of what they're made up of?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I don't know if you're born with it or if it grows with you. I think it kind of is a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's kind of the nature nurture kind of discussion that we can have, but I think that resilience, there are certain people I think that have more resilience. And I think there's certain things that those people do to sort of build that resilience. I really do believe that it starts with the kinds of experiences that people expose themselves to and have to strengthen that. For example, being on a sports team, right? You have to relate to other people. You got to work as a team. You got to focus on the task. You're trying to win. There's some competition involved. There's a high interdependence with the other people that you're working with. Whereas people that tend to be a little more socially isolated, people that tend to maybe a little more introverted, maybe they have a more difficulty with that. And so I think it goes back to a big part of this is about the capacity for the connections that we can create. And those that can do that typically show that resilience a little bit more than others. We had talked a little bit earlier also about grit. And I think grit for me is something that is much more, internal and psychological. It's about the perseverance to get through and to get something done. Whereas resilience is more of how do we deal with the setbacks and that we can bounce back when we face a particular challenge. And so it requires that grit to get through, and it requires that psychological resource to enable us to be successful. I might be getting a little bit off topic here, but resilience is almost like a process that people follow, whereas the grit is what you use to get through that process, if that makes any sense.
Sure. So to tap into resilience, again, going back to that analogy of deposits and then taking that out at the appropriate times. I think a lot of times, I think right now, probably people are feeling a little bit like their count is near zero, and they're trying to draw some more as far as just to stay resilient in the midst of just a very fluid time as far as things changing and having to adapt so constantly. A lot of our listeners are first-time leaders. And, you know, what are some thoughts around, again, leading a team during this time? What are some things a leader could be doing to help with the team and just kind of making sure that people, you know, maybe there are some that are doing okay and flourishing and others are struggling. But what are some thoughts around that as far as leading a team and being aware of the people's resilience and their levels?
Yeah. It's a great question. And I think that there's a few things that leaders can do that can be really, really, really helpful. The first thing I think is the leader sets an appropriate sort of vision for the team or the department or whatever they're leading, and set a vision that people can anticipate with hope and with a positive sort of view to the future, and can have a concrete image in their mind of what that future looks like, what that vision looks like. It's not enough to say that we're, you know, very aspirational in our vision, but really laying out the concrete sort of vision and concrete picture of what that vision looks like. I refer to it as hope, right? Hope is not a goal and it's not a strategy, but it's an image of what we can become as a team. So if a leader's goal, I think, is to really identify specifically what that image looks like, and a leader that can paint that and really concretely for people is very important. Another thing that they can do is just recognize some of the relational resources that are necessary. And so building the connective capacity within a group and a team, finding those that can work well together, figuring out the best ways. We're in virtual environments right now, right? So what's the best way for people to be able to connect despite the fact that we're separated? Are there moments when we can have face-to-face with other people in a socially distant, you know, safe way? Or are there ways that we can do some things technologically to foster that? But it's really about finding some concrete strategies to build those connections in the workplace. And with clients or customers outside as well, but figuring out how to build those relationships, because those become deposits, and those are ways that we can redeposit back into that resilience account. Another thing I think is a leader just to recognize the flexibility and the agility that we have to have. Agility from an organizational and team point of view, but recognizing a compassionate flexibility for the people that we work with. You know, not everybody comes to work with the same set of background, right? We bring a lot of ourselves to work. And so we have to be flexible in understanding the kinds of challenges that people are having outside of work. Our students, for example, are, they've got kids over their shoulder while we're trying to teach class, right? So the professors have to demonstrate a little bit of that flexibility and have a compassion toward what they're dealing with. One of our students this past quarter had COVID and was in the hospital and completed the courses despite sitting in a hospital bed. So, you know, that to me is a pretty strong example of resilience, but that's an example of a teacher finding the best ways to help that student and creating the connections within that cohort of students so they can be successful. Another piece is to really focus on learning. Leaders that help their people really focus on learning and development, helping them grow as individuals, as a team, learning from their past, learning from their mistakes, learning from what's happening, having open discussions. You know, there's obviously right now there's a lot of big emphasis on the inclusion and diversity, and being able to have that dialogue and opening up that dialogue in a healthy way to recognize and understand differences rather than create dissension and dissent among people. So having a learning organization, a learning sort of orientation can be a really positive way to for a leader to sort of help them make those deposits back into that resilience account.
Is there anything around, and I know you've done a lot of work around kind of organizational health and working with different organizations, and I know you've worked with the military as well as corporate clients that you've advised over time, but anything that you think is something that people should at least be aware of and some things that they can do to help kind of the overall organization be a healthier place.
Yeah, I think if organization, I mean, I'm not, part of me is not really focused on health so much as I'm focused on healing.
Okay.
So the concept of organizational healing is sort of follows the metaphor of the human body, right? Having a healing. So you have a wound or a broken bone. And when that happens, when there's a crisis in an organization and a team, one of the immediate reactions is to send as many resources as possible to the site of the wound, the site of the problem. And sometimes that can be helpful and sometimes that can be overwhelming. So it's important for a leader to maintain that growth through change is to make sure that the right resources and the right kinds of things are in place and to balance helpful ones versus ones that won't be very helpful. So it's a very important prioritization and decision and a strategy in a sense about how to do that appropriately. That's sort of the first phase of the healing, and to get that, to get back to health, right, is that first step is to focus on what do we do when the crisis happens. The second is that there becomes a phase of a lot of connection. A lot of people start to work with each other across a boundary, and it goes back to the relational resources that we have around resilience, and what kinds of things are people doing to build connections across boundaries, and strengthening those relationships when they feel broken, and how do we encourage that and build on that strength. And then the third is to figure out ways to maybe adapt the structure and adapt the ways we're doing things. Are the policies correct? Do we have the right teams in place? Do we have the right people? And it takes what we call remodeling, sort of remodeling the organization in a way that sort of fits a new reality, that we're in a different place. So if we speak about health, right, and how do we, it's not necessarily about maintaining health, but it's, we've been through 10 months of a lot of difficulty. How do we start to heal now from that? And it's going to require some changes in the strategies, requiring the structures, changes in the structure, require changes in the relationships that we have with others. And how do we, change, build on those and make them better?
So I ask this of almost every guest that we have on, knowing what you know now, what advice would you give yourself at the age of 22?
If I were looking back at my 22-year-old self, I would probably say find the four or five mentors in your life that you could really become their friend, they're your friend, you can reach out to them and ask questions and talk to them and get advice and really build the relationship with older adults, people who have been through things and understand things, people in your profession, people outside of your profession. People that can give you perspective on what you're doing, that you feel comfortable talking to about the challenges that you're facing personally or at work, and really being able to figure out how to reach out to them and then do that. So I think I had a little bit of that as a 22-year-old. I probably should have done more. I probably also, and that helps with getting advice about the kind of career trajectory you would take, right? Mm-hmm. So early in a person's career, they think that they're going to be something. But in reality, that doesn't ever end up exactly the way they had envisioned it at that age. So having people that have been, that are 30 or 5 or 40, right? That have that kind of experience to give them perspective can be very helpful. That's one thing.
Great. Well, you've got a number of books on your bookshelf behind you, and I know that's just not a prop. You probably read some of those. So, any books that you would recommend to a leader?
Yes, I've got a couple actually.
Okay,
these are all literature books over here. These are my daughter's books. She's an English major. These are some other kinds of books, and I've got a whole two other shelves over here. But I love history. And there's some great history books out there that I I can't get enough of. But from a management leader point of view, there's one book that actually has resonated with me, and I teach this book on a routine basis. It's actually a very, very positive book. It's called The Outward Mindset by the Arbinger Institute. And it's just an excellent book about how do we think about our relationships with other people in how we lead, and their implications for how we see people versus just how we treat them. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between our behavior toward a person and the way we fundamentally see them and have a regard for them. And so I teach a lot this notion of, how we see, do we see person as a person, or do we see the person as an object, as an instrument or an obstacle in my work? Or do I see them as a human being that has needs, concerns, challenges, worries, aspirations, hopes, fears, and that they are as real to me as I am to myself, and not just an object that's in my way or that I can use to get what I need. So it's a great book that I have the students read the Arbinger Institute's work. There's several of their books that they have that are just excellent. And it's an eye-opening experience for many of the students, because there's so much focus on the practice of the doing and the tactics of our management that we don't stop and think to say, do I even care about the person that I'm working with? And if I care about them, then the way I'm going to react, the way I'm going to respond, is going to reflect how I really care and really see the person. And when I respond from that point of view, I'm actually going to create interventions, create practices, create decisions and tasks at work that are going to reflect that way of seeing. So it's a really good book. The Arbinger's Outward Mindset.
Okay. I don't think that's one we've had a number of podcasts, and I don't think that book's been mentioned. So definitely put it on our list. So outside of work, Ned, what do you do to recharge?
I do a lot of walking, and we live right by the ocean, so we enjoy taking walks at the ocean. Biking, a little bit of biking. We spend a lot of time with the kids. Traveling and just kind of visiting in different places. We've done a lot of traveling in the state of California and just seeing different places and learning about where we live. And, and then besides being sort of active, I do read quite a bit like I said, history is just kind of a real love of mine.
So what parting advice would you give a new leader or one that maybe has just taken on some more responsibility? What advice would you give?
Yeah, I think that new leaders could benefit a lot from really trying to understand themselves in the context of their work and how they are seeing themselves in relation to other people. And also seeing other people as themselves and really trying to understand. So it's an emotional intelligence kind of frame, right? Really starting to understand yourself as a leader, understand yourself as a manager, understand how you're interacting, how you're coming across to other people, and building that sort of self-awareness as well as the social awareness, and learning how to managing the emotions you have from work, other pieces of your parts of your life, and then and being able to lead with inspiration using that knowledge. I think those are some of the things I would say to a new leader.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.